will start back up again. And we left off on Article 3. If you're looking at the summary guide, which I went to the wrong page, is on page 59. If you want to use the shorter summary side-by-side. So with that, I believe we will turn it over to staff to start Article 3. And then we'll break after each article for quick clarifying questions if folks want. So let's get through the whole article first and then stop.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. We are in Article 3, which is the READ Act.
Can you please state your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Christina Para, House Research.
Article
3, the READ Act, and all of the policy provisions in this article are same or similar, so I'll just go through them. Sections 1 and 2 are part of the world's best workforce, removing third grade literacy from the world's best workforce requirements and literacy from the planning and reporting requirements there. Section 3 is the citation for the READ Act, saying stating which sections will be cited as the READ Act. Section 4 amends the current reading proficiently statute. It sets the modifies the literacy goal, modifies requirements relating to identification of students not demonstrating mastery of foundational reading skills, intervention requirements, requiring training in evidence-based reading instruction for teachers and instructional support staff, amends the local literacy plan requirements, and requires districts to use an approved screener. Section 6 modifies the dyslexia specialist statute, replacing a reference to the READ Act modifies the definition relating to reading instruction, and so there are a number of conforming changes in several statutes, so this is one place where you will see that to be consistent with the READ Act. Section 7 is the READ Act implementation. It has requirements relating to the reading screeners, progress monitoring, and developing an intervention plan for students not reading at grade level, encourages districts to adopt evidence-based literacy curriculum and to adopt MTSS framework, requires districts to provide evidence-based training, to employ a literacy lead, and has several requirements for the Department of Education. Section 8 is the READ Act implementation partnership. It requires the department to team up with CARI, which is at the University of Minnesota, for 2 years to support the implementation of the READ Act, to do things like identify evidence-based literacy curricula and professional development programs and other resources. It also requires the department and CARI to establish a process for a district to request that additional curricula or professional development be approved, and also requires the department and CARI to support district efforts to implement the READ Act. Section 12 is the Minnesota Reading Corps, and that's one of the places where you see a conforming change being made to use the definitions from the READ Act. Section 13 amends the uses of literacy incentive aid, requiring the aid to be used, for example, for evidence-based reading instruction. Section 14 is the appropriations. Section 15 repeals definitions relating to reading instruction. Madam Chair, and that is the article.
Thank you. I know Senator McQuaid's been working hard on this with Representative Edelson, but there might still be some clarifying questions folks have, or did you want to make a comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very excited about the READ Act. I want to thank Senator Duckworth, who's been a great partner on this as well, and Representative Edelson and Chair Kunish. So I'm just thinking it's a good time to teach kids how to read.
Thank you. Any other clarifying questions from folks? Seeing none, why don't we go ahead and go to the next article?
Madam Chair and members, my name is Betsy Gelseth, the nonpartisan analyst on the education committees for the Senate. I'm going to review Article 4, American Indian Education, starting on page 70 of the side-by-side summary. Section 1 of the House file and then Section 1 of the Senate file 1311 allows educational data to be disclosed to tribal nations about tribally enrolled or descendant students. This is very similar to the House. The Senate just refers to Minnesota tribal governments in their definition. Section 2 is a House provision only, and it replaces Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day on a list of holidays that a school district may conduct school. Section 3 of the House bill is the same as Section 2 of the Senate file 1311, and it requires the commissioner to consider advice from representatives from the Tribal Nations Education Committee and Minnesota's Tribal Nations for academic standards, revision, and development. Section 4 of the House file and Section 3 of Senate file 1311 relates to revisions and review, and it requires Indigenous education standards that include the contributions of American Indian tribes and communities to be embedded into the state's academic standards and graduation requirements. Page 71, moving on to Section 5 of the House file and Section 4 of Senate file 1311, establishes a requirement for the commissioner's development and implementation of Indigenous education for all, and this is the same, matches up with the House. Section 6 of the House file and Section 5 of the Senate file 1311 prohibits a school district or charter school from adopting a name, symbol, or image of an American Indian tribe, custom, or tradition as a mascot, nickname, logo, letterhead, or team name for the school or for the district or school. The difference is that the Senate does allow for an exception. On page 72 of the summary, section 7 of the House file is a House only provision, and it establishes an account in the Special Revenue Fund, and this is called the Minnesota Indian Teacher Training Program account. And it allows the grants to be used for up to 60 months, $75,000. Section 8 of the House file is the same as Senate file 1311, Section 6, and it defines the American Indian student, defines the American Indian student. And that's now the new definition instead of the federal definition. Section 9 of the House file is the same as Section 7 of Senate file 1311, and it clarifies that American Indian education programs are designed to support American Indian students. Page 73. Section 10 of the House file is similar to Section 8 of Senate file 1311, and then also this section was included in the first unofficial engrossment of Senate file or House file 2497, Section 5, and it limits enrollment in American Indian educational programs on a shared time basis to American Indian children. And then again, there's just a slight difference in the language. Section 11 of the House file matches up with Section 9 of Senate file 1311 and modifies the settings where American Indian education programs may be offered daily. Section 12 is similar to Section 10 of Senate file 1311. There's a slight difference in the language again, but it requires a district or tribal contract school that conducts American Indian education programs under the American Indian Education Act and then serves 100 or more state identified American Indian students to provide American Indian culture and language classes. Moving on to page 74 of the summary, section 13 is the same as Senate file 1311, section 11, and it requires districts receiving American Indian education aid and tribal contract schools to employ a dedicated American Indian education program coordinator. Section 14 is the same as Senate file 1311, section 12, and this clarifies requirements and qualifications for the American Indian parent advisory committees. Section 15 is the same as Senate file 1311, section 13, and this directs the commissioner to use an annual report of American Indian student data that again uses that new state count when they provide technical assistance. Section 16 is the same as Senate file 1311, section 14, and this modifies the duties of the American Indian Education Director of at MDE and directs them to work collaboratively and in conjunction with the tribal liaison, TNEC, the 11 tribal nations throughout the state, the Minnesota Chippewa tribe, and then lastly, the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. Section 17 is similar to Senate File 1311, Section 15. This requires a district or charter school to allow an American Indian student to wear American Indian regalia, tribal regalia, or objects of cultural significance at graduation ceremonies. The difference there is the House has the immediate effective date. Section 18 is lined up with the first unofficial girl submit of House File 2497, Section 6, and again, a little difference in the language, but this is allowing cooperative units that enroll a minimum of 20 students to receive that American Indian educational aid. And it also allows a school district or tribal contract school that does not use up the whole amount of its tribal contract aid to carry it forward to the next year with some caveats. And then it also requires a state count again to be used to determine whether a district charter school or tribal contract school is eligible for American Indian aid. And then moving on to page 76, section 19 lines up with, House File 2497, section 7. And this is the same for both bodies, and it includes a pupil enrolled in a tribal contract or grant school and the definition of average daily membership. So they receive the additional money for online learning. Section 20 lines up with Senate File 1311, section 18, same again. And it allows an American Indian student to carry a medicine pouch containing loose tobacco intended as observance of traditional spiritual or cultural practices. And then lastly, we have the appropriation sections.
Thank you. Members, are finished. Yep.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm really super proud of this bill and the efforts that the state is putting forward to address, first of all, the history of our American Indian folks and students and families. It's been a long, hard history for our Indigenous people, and this is going to really make a difference, I believe, to bring our students who have some of the worst learning disparities and graduation rates in line with the rest of the student population. And speaking as a descendant of the Indigenous people, I think this is going to really speak to the sovereignty and the pride and the possibilities for our Indigenous people. So it's a proud day. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Kunesh. Any other suggestions? I know they're awful. Any other clarifying questions? Seeing none, we'll move over to the next article.
Madam Chair, members, Article 5 on the House side, Article 5 in the bill is the teacher's article. It starts, the summary is on page 76. And Section 1 is similar for each body, lining up with Section 1 from House Senate File 1311, requires a school board to meet and negotiate with the exclusive representative of teachers before adopting an e-learning day.
And Madam Chair, members, Amory Lewis, Senate Counsel. On page 77, the Senate File Section 1 of the unofficial Grossman is a grant program for closing educational opportunity grants. Gaps. And then, Madam Chair, members, on page 79 of the side-by-side summary, is Section 2 of the House File, Section 6 of the Senate File, and it establishes a curriculum policy to prevent discipline of a teacher or principal for incorporating certain contributions of persons in a federally protected class into the curriculum. Section 3 of the House File, Section 5 of the Senate File are the same, and it's a provision to increase the number of teachers of color in Minnesota, and that gets us to page 80.
Madam Chair, members, Section 4, the next 20 or so sections are House only. So Section 4 requires a teacher to hold a field license or permission aligned to the content area and scope of the teacher's assignment. Section 5 expands the definition, the sections that the definitions in Section 122A06 apply to. So the next few ones are all definitions. Section 6 modifies the definition of teacher. Section 7 modifies the definition of field by adding licensure area, is a synonymous term. Section 8 modifies the definition of shortage area and how a shortage area is determined. Section 9 strikes examples of teacher preparation programs from the definition. Section 10 adds examples of teacher preparation program providers to the definitions. Section 11 defines a district as a school district or charter school. Section 12 defines a transfer pathway as an established pathway to licensure between a two-year college or tribal college and board-approved preparation provider. Section 13 requires Pelsby to approve teacher preparation providers. Section 14 modifies the register of licensed teachers that Pelsby must maintain and requires the list to be available on the board's website. Section 15 adds sections, it modifies the list of sections that Pelsby is authorized to adopt rules for. Section 16 expands the types of teacher preparation programs Pelsby must encourage to develop alternative pathways. Section 17 modifies the Pelsby report on teacher preparation providers. Section 18 modifies the Pelsby report to the legislature regarding teacher candidates. Section 19 modifies the sections to which the definition of teacher for purposes of licensure applies. Section 20 makes technical changes. Section 21 corrects a statutory reference relating to support personnel qualifications. Section 22 limits the licensure via portfolio process to initial Tier 3 licenses or to add a licensure field to a Tier 3 or 4 license. Section 23 requires Pelsby to collect data on educators' employment and assignments from all districts and charter schools and allows the report to include data on educators' demographics and licensure. Going on to page 84 of the summary, Section 24 requires an application to be submitted, an application for a Tier 1 license to be submitted jointly by an applicant and district and has requirements about how it's to be paid for. Section 25 makes a technical change to the Tier 1 license statute. Section 26 expands the list of applicants exempt from a requirement to hold a bachelor's degree for a Tier 1 license to include persons teaching world languages and culture and the performing or visual arts, and it requires Pelsby to adopt rules. Section 27 strikes a provision allowing Pelsby to submit written comments to a district or charter school that requests a Tier 1 license renewal. Section 28 allows Pelsby to review applications for a Tier 1 license before July 1 and removes the 30-day deadline for issuing or denying the license. Section 29 on the House side matches up with Section 8 of Senate File 1311. Those are the same, allowing a Tier 1 teacher to be part of the teacher bargaining unit. The next four sections are House only. Section 30, and they all amend the Tier 2 teacher's license. So Section 30 requires applications to be submitted jointly by the applicant and district, and strikes the coursework requirement, replacing it with a requirement that an applicant complete a state-approved teacher preparation program. Section 31 expands the list of applicants exempt from the requirement to hold a bachelor's degree to include persons teaching world languages and culture and the performing or visual arts, and requires Pelsby to adopt rules. Section 32 allows a Tier 2 teacher who would otherwise be ineligible to renew the license based on the changes in the bill to continue to renew that license for the 23-24, 24-25, and 25-26 school years only. Section 33 allows Pelsby to begin renewing license applications before July 1 and remove the 30-day deadline for issuing or denying the license. Section 34 on the House side matches up with Section 2 of Senate File 2497. They are similar. You strike a provision allowing a candidate to obtain a Tier 3 license without a bachelor's degree, and that's recodified in a separate section. It also requires PELSB to issue a Tier 3 license to a candidate who either completed a teacher prep program for specific institutions or completed a university teacher preparation program in another country and has taught at least 2 years, as long as the student teaching is comparable to Minnesota requirements. Sections, the next three sections are house-only sections amending Tier 3 licenses. Section 35 eliminates the pathway to Tier 3 license for Tier 2 teachers who have taught for 3 years and have a summative evaluation that didn't place them on an improvement process. Section 36 expands the list of applicants exempt from the requirement to hold a bachelor's degree to include persons teaching world languages and culture and the performing or visual arts, and requires PELSB to adopt rules. Section 37 is legacy language, allowing a candidate with a Tier 2 license to obtain a Tier 3 license via that pathway that's eliminated until December 31, 2026. Section 38 on the House side is different from the Senate section, so I'll just describe the House section. It requires an applicant for a Tier 4 license to have a field-specific teaching experience from any state rather than only Minnesota, and complete Tier 4 renewal requirements if the applicant previously held a Tier 3 license, and it strikes the requirement that the candidate's most recent summative evaluation not have placed the candidate on an improvement process.
Madam Chair and members, the Senate Section 3 allows a teacher to get a Tier 4 license if they have at least 3 years of teaching experience in Minnesota or another state to qualify for the license. And then, Madam Chair and members, page 87, Section 39 of the House file and Section 4 of the Senate file relates to testing is for teacher licensure requirements. And both bills do strike the requirement for the basic skills examination for teachers. And then there are some differences, but the Senate file requires a Tier 3 or 4 licensure candidate to have a pedagogical knowledge exam and the field-specific content exam if they have been not completed a board-approved teacher prep program.
Madam Chair, the House section eliminates the skills reading and writing and math for Tier 4 license and pedagogy and content exams for specific applicants, including those that go through the portfolio process, and also eliminates the reading instruction for Tier 3 and 4 licenses, and has provisions relating to the testing opportunities for candidates. The next four sections are house only. So on page 88 of the summary, section 40 strikes the requirement that PELSB approved teacher preparation programs provide students remedial assistance if they don't pass the exam. There's similar language in the previous section. Section 41 strikes the requirement that PELSB require satisfactory evidence of teaching or administrative experience to renew a license. Also strikes the requirement that PELSB establish requirements for renewing a coach license. Section 42 requires PELSB to adopt rules that require all licensed teachers to have professional development in the cultural heritage and contemporary contributions of American Indians to renew their licenses. Section 43 expands the organizations that can have teacher preparation programs. Section 44 on the House side and Section 10 of Senate File 1311 are the same. They allow adult basic education and early childhood family education teachers to obtain tenure or a continuing contract. Section 45 on the House side and Section 5, Senate File 2497 are the same. Requiring a district to annually report to PELSB all new teacher hires and terminations by race and ethnicity and the reasons for the teacher resignations and requested leaves of absence. Section 46 on the House side matches up to two, Senate File 2497, Section 6, and Senate File 1311, Section 11. They both reduce so both bodies combining those sections reduce the number of days of teaching service a probationary teacher must complete during the probationary period from 120 days to 90 days. And they modifies the probationary period for a teacher who has taught for 3 consecutive years in a single district or charter school in Minnesota. This is the continuing contract statute, so that'll appear in a few sections for the teacher tenure section. So you'll hear that again in just a minute. Section 47 is the same for both bodies. It's section 12, but Senate File 1311, modifying the teacher development and evaluation and coaching subdivision for teachers. Requiring a rubric of performance standards for teacher practice based on professional teaching standards established in rule. Section 48 on the House side and Section 13 of Senate File 1311, that's that probationary period statute again, but in the Teacher Tenure Act. So again, reducing the number of days in the probationary period. Section 49 on the House side and Section 14 in Senate File 1311 are the same. And that's, again, the teacher evaluation process. So before the section was for the continuing contract statute, and now it's the same provision for the teacher tenure districts. Section 50 on the House side and Section 8 of Senate File 2497 are the same. Again, requiring the reporting to PELSB about teacher hires and terminations. This is in the tenure section. Section 51 on the House side and Section 9 of Senate File 2497 amend the QCOMP entitlement. That's the Alternative Teacher Compensation Aid. And the differences there are based on the House, are related to the House's VPK. That amends the numbers that each body carries for the QCOMP. Section 52 is a House-only provision establishing a short-call substitute teacher pilot program for the 23-24 and 24-25 school years. Allows a district or charter school and an applicant to jointly request PELSB to approve an application for a short-call substitute license. If the applicant meets certain requirements, one of which is working as an education support professional or paraprofessional in the district. It also allows PELSB to prioritize short call substitute teaching license applications and sets minimum rate of pay for substitute teachers under the pilot. Section 53 on the House and Section 10 of Senate File 2497 are the same. These are the Come Teach in Minnesota hiring bonuses. It expands eligibility for the bonuses, increases the bonus amounts, and allows the commissioner to award participating districts additional funds to administer the program. Section 54 on the House side and Section 11 of Senate File 2497 is the same. So that's supporting heritage language and culture teachers. To increase the number of heritage language and culture teachers in Minnesota. Then moving to page 96 of the summary is the same for each body. Section 55 on the House side, Section 12, Senate File 2497. It's the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color Grant Program. It modifies how the grants are awarded, how the grant program is administered, and modifies the reporting requirements. Going to page 100 of the summary. Section 56 of the House file, that's the House-only provision, strikes the requirement that student teachers complete at least 2 years of an approved teacher preparation program before they get the classroom experience. Section 57 on the House side matches up with Section 13 of Senate File 2497. These are similar, modifying the teacher mentorship and retention of effective teachers statute that modify grant eligibility, requiring PELSB to prioritize grants for particular activities, and allows the grants to be awarded for up to 24 months. Section 58 on the House side, and it's different from the Senate file. The House Grow Your Own District programs allows charter schools and cooperative units to receive Grow Your Own program grants to establish a pathway for adults to obtain their first professional teaching license, and requires grantees to partner with a PELSB-approved teacher preparation program.
And Madam Chair, members, in the Senate file side, the Senate file adds Head Start programs as potential program for Grow Your Own, and sets a maximum grant award of $850,000. Then the next section is Section 59 in the House file and Section 15 in the Senate file, and they are similar. It provides for grants for programs for serving secondary school students in the from the Teachers of Color.
Madam Chair, Section 60 of the House file, it's a House only provision establishing increases the amount transferred from the Grow Your Own program account for MDE's administrative costs from $100,000 to $175,000 per year. Section 61 on the House side, it's a House only provision establishing a special education teacher pipeline program, providing grants to school districts, charter schools, or cooperative units that partner with a teacher preparation program. It prioritizes funding for Tier 1 or Tier 2 teachers to become Tier 3 teachers, and establishes a special education teacher pipeline program account in the special revenue fund. Section 62 on the House side and Section 16 of Senate File 2497 are the same, modifying the principal annual evaluation process. I should note that the Senate file, Senate carries the provision in both the policy and finance bills, but it's the same changes. Section 63, on the House side is student support personnel aid, and Section 17 of Senate file 2497. They are similar. They both create a new ongoing state aid program to help fund additional school support personnel. They define school support personnel, establish the aid for each district or charter school, and require a report. Section 64. On the House side, it's a House only provision. It modifies the definition of teacher for purposes of PELRA, the Public Employment Labor Relations Act, which determines what individuals can be in the teacher bargaining unit. It includes in the definition of teacher a person creating and delivering instruction to children in a pre-kindergarten or early learning program, but allows the teachers to stay in a different bargaining unit certified before January 1, 2023, with some exceptions. Section 65 also modifies PELRA. It requires collective bargaining for school employees to include class sizes, student testing, and student to personnel ratios. And that's a House only provision. Section 65 is the appropriations. Section 66 is appropriations, also 67. And then 68 is a reviser instruction on the House. It's a House only provision instructing the reviser to substitute the term applicant or applicants for candidates in the statutes relating to teacher licensure. Section 69 is a House only section. It's a repealer. It repeals obsolete language on first appointments to PELSB. language relating to school district reports to PELSBY and BOSA, which is the Board of School Administrators. Also, section subdivision on temporary military licenses, tier two coursework requirements, and teacher and a rule on teacher licensing exams. Madam Chair, that's the article.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think, and I don't know, this doesn't have to be today, and there might be a chart that might be more visually appealing, but there were some changes just to licensure and tiered licensure that I don't know that we did some as well, and I don't know if they're exactly the same, and I think I'd love to see them just so I understand them a little bit better, or we could today, a different day, walk through what those are and kind of what the thought behind it was.
Senator Quaid, absolutely. We did pass a chart out on the House floor, and it was hard to sometimes track, and this is note to self for me to know too, you know, never have an agency do five separate bills when they could do one so we could see where everything's moving. So we had them do a chart, and we can make sure that we get that for folks because I am a visual learner myself. So any other clarifying questions? Not seeing any. Go ahead. Go to the next article.
Madam Chair, members, the next article is Article 6 in the House file, Article 4 in Senate file, Charter Schools. The first sections are very similar. The House file just only defines market needs and demand study. The Senate file, in addition to that, defines charter management organization and educational management organization. Section 2 of the House file and Section 2 of the Senate file are the same, and they require charter schools to comply with statutes on alternatives to suspension. Section 3 of the House file is the same as Section 3 of the Senate file and requires charter schools to comply with Education for English Learners Act. Section 4 of the House file, Section 4 of the Senate file are the same, and they modify the length of an authorizer's term in the contract. Then Section 5 of the House file, Section 5 of the Senate file clarifies authorizer withdrawal agreements. Section 6 of the House file is a bit different than the Senate file, Section 6 of the Senate file. And the section on the Senate side requires a charter school developer's application to the authorizer for approval to establish a charter school to include a market need and demand study.
Madam Chair, members, the House section in the House file in addition strikes the requirement that a charter school submit the statement of assurances of legal compliance.
Then, Madam Chair, members, Section 7 of the House file is the same as Section 7 of the Senate file, and it requires the authorizer's affidavit that's filed with the commissioner to include the market demand need and demand study. Section 8 of the House file, Section 8 of the Senate file requires authorizer approving an application to add grades or enrollment sites to include the market and demand market need and demand study. Section 9 of the House file is the same as Section 9 of the Senate file, and it requires a statement of the specific school's admission policies and procedures in the charter contract. Section 10 of the House file, Section 10 of the Senate file are similar. They require the charter school admission to be free to a state resident and give enrollment preference to Minnesota residents, excuse me, over out-of-state residents. And there's also additional provisions over charter schools that have pre-kindergarten programs and for the students to apply into the kindergarten program. Section 11 of the House file is the same as Section 11 of the Senate file, and it corrects the definition of teachers to indicate that they are either directly employed by the school or under contract with the cooperative. Section 12 of the House file is the same as Section 12 of the Senate file, and it is relating to lease space and requires the charters to lease from the owner of the space instead of subleasing the space. Section 13 of the House file is the same as Section 13 of the Senate file, and it prohibits an affiliated building corporation from supporting more than one charter school. Section 14 of the Senate file is a Senate-only provision, and it relates to the reports and that a charter school does, and includes public accounting and reporting for CMO and EMO agreements. Then getting to page 113 of the comparison summary is the last section of this article, section 14 of the House file, section 15 of the Senate file, and it strikes an obsolete reference to chapter 308A. And Madam Chair and members, that's the end of article 6 of charter schools.
Members, any clarifying questions on article 6? Seeing none, go ahead and go to Article 7.
Madam Chair, members, Tim Strom from House Research. Article 7 is the special education article. There are a number of provisions in the bill that both the House and Senate do that increase the age of service for students with a disability to 22 years of age. So you'll see the language of Section 1, both the House and Senate bill, repeated in a number of places in this article.
Madam Chair and members, Section 1 from Senate File 1311 is a Senate provision only, and it requires an early childhood developmental screening to include developmental assessments, which could include virtual developmental screening for families who make the request based on their immunocompromised health status or health conditions. Section 2 of the House file aligns with Section 2 of the Senate. And it's the same, and it updates the definition of a pupil to include a student with a disability under 22 years of age who has not yet received a high school diploma. Section 3 of the House file is the same as Section 3 of the Senate file, and this adds a certified deaf interpreter to the allowed types of certifications required for a person employed by a school district to provide American Sign Language or English interpreting or sign transliterating services. And then it also makes employees who meet the requirements for an American Sign Language or English interpreter essential personnel, and this is for special education aid purposes. Section 4 of the House file is, Mr. Strom, I don't know if you want to talk about your side, but I can talk about the Section 8 of the Senate side, and this requires a school district to give a paraprofessional paid time or time during the school day to review a student's IEP or to be briefed on a student's specific needs, and the Senate does not include the due process revenue that the House includes.
Madam Chair, members, on the House side on Section 4, this is a new aid program proposed for due process time for special education teachers. There's a default of 43.75 hours of paid time for providing those special education teachers with time to work on the paperwork. There's a series of processes set up if to negotiate other types of uses of that money, and then there's a funding formula to pay for those services that starts at $29 per adjusted pupil unit, and then in the next year drops to $16.25 per pupil unit. And there's also a component for the cooperatives and intermediate school districts on the funding side. Section 5 of the House bill and 4 of the Senate bill are the same for pupil transportation. Currently, in the special education pupil transportation, any transport of homeless students is incorporated in that. This would include the governor's recommendation that foster care transportation be included in the same manner. Sections 6, 7, and 8 all have to do with a 22-year-old birthday. Section 9 of the House bill is similar to Section 17 of the Senate file, and this has to do with the standards for restrictive procedures. Perhaps Ms. Yelseth would like to speak to the Senate side. One of the primary differences is the date. The House currently has the date of December 31st, 2024 for the prohibition of seclusion for children who are ages birth through grade 3.
And the House includes commissioner recommendations while the Senate bill does not. Section 10 of the House bill, Section 6 of the Senate bill allows parent or student with a disability who is not yet enrolled in a kindergarten program and not open enrolled in a non-resident district, they're allowed to elect a school in the non-resident district, and this is similar, but the House has a little bit more limitation on some of the choices. Moving on to page 118 of the side-by-side summary, Section 11 is the same, or Section 11 of the House bill is the same as Section 2 of the Senate bill, and this relates to a placement of a student in a district, and it allows the district of residence or non-resident district for a child with a disability temporarily placed in another district for care and treatment to utilize a state-approved online learning program to fill their educational program responsibility if the child's a parent or a guardian agreed to this. Section 12 of the House file is the same as Section 3 of the Senate file, and this is a little bit similar. It allows the district or resident of residence or non-resident district for a child without a disability who has a short-term or temporarily physical or emotional illness or disability and who is temporarily placed for care and treatment to utilize a state-approved online learning program again to fulfill their educational program responsibilities, again, if the child's parent or guardian approve. Section 13 of the House bill is the same as Section 4 of the Senate bill, and this allows the district of residence or non-resident district for a child in a residential facility to utilize a state-approved online learning program again. And then Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, Section 14 of the House bill breaks out the homeless student transportation from other special education transportation. And the reason for this is that there are three different methods under which special education revenue is determined for school districts, depending on their characteristics for that year. And about a third of the school districts in the state fall into the category of revenue where the entire amount of the homeless transportation is not paid for. For the other two-thirds of the districts under the formulas that they fall under for special education, 100% of that cost is paid for. This provision would essentially remove the homeless transportation from the front end of that calculation and add it a little later so that for all school districts, 100% of the cost of homeless transportation would be reimbursed. The next provision on the House side is the special education cross-subsidy aid. Both in the House and the Senate, the majority of the special education money is spent on increasing the portion of the special education aid that's spent for the House. The increase is immediate from 6.43% to 47.8% and then stays at that level into the future.
And then the Senate, the main difference here is the bill also increases the special education cross-subsidy aid factor, but in fiscal year 24, the bill increases it to 40%, fiscal year 25, 47.3%, and then again increases it up to 60% for fiscal year 26 and later.
Madam Chair, members, Section 16 is the new aid calculation for the homeless transportation as a separate component of the special education formulas. Section 17 of the House and 10 of the Senate are the same and create a new ongoing state aid for certain special education programs that are offered by cooperative units, particularly the intermediate school districts. That aid amount is specified in the statute each year, and that would be a permanent and ongoing appropriation. The next provision is the same in both bills, and this has to do with third-party reimbursement, sections 18 of the House and 11 of the Senate. Under current law, some services that school districts provide that are health-related are eligible for third-party reimbursement through the state's medical assistance program. The category of social work is one where only a very limited number of services are currently eligible for reimbursement. This provision that's the same in both bills would expand the number of social work services that qualify for third-party reimbursement. And Madam Chair, members, that brings us to Section 19 on page 122 of the summary. This is the specific learning disability category. Minnesota's Disabilities are categorized by rule into each of 13 different categories, and one of those categories is the specific learning disability category. This provision sets in motion the process for the commissioner to amend the rule, to establish a work group to advise the commissioner, and to provide technical assistance in a process to get to a new definition for this category of students who may have this, who may currently fit under this rule for a specific learning disability.
Madam Chair and members, Section 5 of Senate File 1311 is a Senate provision only, and this requires the commissioner to define gifted student, talented student, twice exceptional student, print disabled student, and reading disabled student. It also requires the commissioner to determine what qualifies a student in each category for special education services, and then also requires the commissioner to report the definitions by February 15th, 2024 to the legislature. And then section 20 is the appropriations, and those are different amounts.
Okay, are there any clarifying questions on that article? Seeing none, go ahead and go to the next one.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you. The next article is the facilities article, Article 8 in the House and Article 6 in the Senate. A number of the House provisions amend individual subdivisions of the long-term facilities maintenance revenue program, primarily to remove obsolete language. These includes on page 123 of the section of the summary, sections 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Section 3 has to do with the way that cooperative units are treated for purposes of the ability for school districts to issue deferred maintenance bonds for the member districts as a portion of the member districts long-term facilities maintenance revenue. These provisions are the same in the House and Senate bill, except the Senate has a better effective date. I'm just seeing if anyone's awake. Madam Chair, members, sections 8 is another one of the obsolete language provisions.
Yes, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So since you woke me up, Mr. Strong. No, actually, I was going to ask this. Just a simple question. I mean, we have the obsolete language. Is the Senate in agreement that's obsolete as well? Is that going to be? I mean, those aren't going to be contentious discussions, are they?
No.
Okay. I just was, I mean, just something to be simple.
Yeah, we're going to go line by line.
That's what I'm asking.
We will clean all that up.
Okay. Madam Chair, members, Section 9 is a substantive change to long-term facilities maintenance revenue. Currently, that revenue is limited for certain purposes. This authorizes a school district to expand the purposes of the use and to use long-term facilities maintenance revenue for purposes of remodeling or constructing a gender-neutral single-user restroom at each of its school sites. Section 10 pairs with this as well in terms of there's the both the both the prohibition and the restrictions. So the authorized use is created in 9. The elimination of the prohibition of that of the use for new construction is in Section 10. Section 11 is another provision that relates to facilities modification. School districts, when they propose a building project in excess of $2 million, need to have the Commissioner of Education perform a review and comment on the facility. The review and comments for future school facility construction projects would also include the district specifying what its plans are for gender-neutral single-user restrooms, for locker room privacy stalls, and for other spaces with privacy features. Section 12, Madam Chair, is a House-only provision and makes clear that operating capital may be used for a gender-neutral single-user restroom for locker privacy stalls or other privacy spaces. That I believe that use is probably already allowed, but the language highlighted there makes clear that that can be an acceptable use. There's a long list of uses for operating capital revenue. Section 13 of the House and two of the Senate have the same intent. And these authorize the school districts to levy up to $65 per pupil for the facility needs of a joint powers or a cooperative school district. Under current law, this lease authority is only available for school districts who are members of intermediate school districts. And again, here there's relettering, and I'm not sure if our effective date is here is different here as well. Yeah. Yes. Go ahead, Ms. Yelsey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just add the effective date on the Senate side is 2025, and then the House side is 2024, but we'd want to have it for 2025 again to match the levy cycle. Section 14 of the House bill and Section 3 of the Senate bill requires Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth school districts to have a review and comment for achievement and integration revenue, which is what is required of other school districts.
Madam Chair, members, Section 15 of the House bill expands the current Safe Schools levy program to include certain cybersecurity expenditures. There's no change in the revenue amount in this section of statute, but as a highlighted list of the things that a school district may spend the $36 per pupil on, a series of cybersecurity purposes are added to the statute. Section 16 of the House and 4 of the Senate are nearly identical. These provisions allow the Eastern Carver County School District to levy for the costs of a pupil transportation hub. Madam Chair, members, Section 17 of the House and 6 of the Senate are slightly different. Under the House side, a provision is created for school districts that remodel a facility if they need to, particularly in the cases that were brought to the House were two big box stores that were being remodeled and the air handling systems needed to be brought up to the new standard for classrooms. In both of those cases, the district incurred additional expenses with those. The House makes this an ongoing authority as part of long-term facilities maintenance revenue.
Still on page 126, the next one, Section 7, is a Senate provision only, and this allows the Moorhead Area Public Schools to permanently transfer up to $5 million from their long-term facility maintenance reserve account and then place it into their operating capital reserve account. And requires those funds to be used to pay for increased costs of constructing, furnishing, and equipping the new Moorhead High School facility. And then lastly, Section 18 of the House file and Section 8 of the Senate file are appropriations. And that wraps up that.
Members, any clarifying questions on that?
I move we remove the obsolete language.
Thank you, Representative Fuchsia. We'll get to that eventually when we have our nonpartisan staff ready to go. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair. Section 7 of the Senate side of the sheet, is that the, what was it, a Home Depot or something that they acquired that had gone out of business and that they're refurbishing? I remember that correctly.
Representative Hill. Oh, go ahead. Yes, you are absolutely correct. They're just utilizing a big box store rather than rebuilding and, you know, reuse, recycle, and all that good stuff.
Thank you, Representative Hill. You did remind me, too, as we heard that bill and included it, but the fund transfer, I'm not sure if we heard. Did we? No. So did the Senate hear the fund transfer in a bill?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Any other clarifying questions for Article 8? Nope. Go ahead and start on Article 9.
Madam Chair, on page 127, Article 9, Section 1 of the House bill and then Section 18 of the Senate bill are the same except for the immediate effective date on the House side. This requires the commissioner to review an applicant's financial eligibility documents as part of the application for child and adult care food program and the summer food service program sponsors. Section 2 again is the same as Section 19 of the Senate, except for those effective dates. And then this clarifies that providing alternative meals not specifically related to dietary needs is prohibited under the respectful treatment requirements for school lunch program participants. Section 3 of the House file is the same as Section 1 of the Senate file, and this expands the school breakfast program to include an early childhood special education student participating in a voluntary pre-kindergarten program. Section 4 aligns with Section 20 of the Senate file. There's a little bit different languages, but the same intent is there. And again, the House has the immediate effective date. And this relates to the summer food service program, again, makes some technical amendment changes, and then limits how often legally distinct child and adult food care and summer food service program sponsors sites can transfer sponsoring organizations to once a year. And then I'm trying to see. Okay, that's Section 5 of the House bill, and then Section 2 of the Senate bill is the same intent. The Senate just adds the word public in the head note up top, and this states that a school library or media center provides equitable and free access to students, teachers, and administrators. And then it also lists some required characteristics that the library or media center must include. Section 6 is the same as Section 9 of the Senate file, and this substitutes resident for citizen regarding the responsibility of the state to provide library services. Section 7 of the House file is the same as Section 10 of the Senate file, and this makes a technical change to the name of the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled, and this aligns with the federal change. Section 8 of the House file is the same as Section 11 of the Senate file, and this substitutes multilingual learners for Spanish speaking. And then in the list of examples of innovative and experimental library programs, page 130 on the summary side by side, Section 9 is the same from the House bill as Section 12 of the Senate bill. And then this requires the regional library basic system support aid recipients to comply with reduced maintenance of effort requirements. Then the next section is a Senate only provision. And then just to point out, the next four sections are related to the basic regional library system. So Section 3 of the Senate side on page 130, beginning in fiscal year 2026, it increases the basic system support aid by 1+ the % increase in the basic forming allowance from the previous year to the current year. The Section 10 of the House file aligns and is the same with Section 4 of the Senate file. This increases the basic aid distribution from 5% to 15% of the available funds being paid to each system. And this is considered their base aid for basic system services. Still on the basic regional library system, Section 11 of the House file is the same as Section 5 of the Senate file. And it reduces the adjusted net tax capacity per capita distribution from 25% to 15%. And then makes another technical change with when they should use the tax capacity calculation, which year, prior year, and then also some additional technical corrections. Page 131 is the same for House file Section 12 and Senate file Section 6, and it amends the regional public library's population calculation to use the most recent estimate available at the time that those aids are calculated. Section 7 on the Senate side is a Senate provision only, and this creates a school library aid funding stream for school districts and charter schools, and this is equal to $15 times the adjusted pupil units for the school, or $50,000. And then it also requires that school library aid that districts and charter schools receive to be reserved and used for specific listed purposes. And then lastly, it requires a school library to that is located within a school to restrict student access to materials, and which is the same under Section 125B.15. Section 13 of the House bill is similar to Section 8 of the Senate bill. There are different amounts, and this is related to the adjusting the school lunch appropriation to account for the extension of the voluntary pre-kindergarten and school readiness plus. And just as a reminder, there's different amounts on that, so that's why those appropriation amounts are different. Section 14 of the House file is again similar to Section 9 of the Senate file, and it's again adjusting those school breakfast appropriation amounts to account for the extension of the BPK and school readiness plus seats. And Section 15 is the appropriation section. Oh, and then moving on to page 132, section 16 of the House file is the same as section 30 of the Senate file, and this is a reviser instruction that instructs the reviser to replace free lunch, reduced price lunch, reduced price, I'm not going to read all those, but clarifying, cleaning up some of that language. Thank you to the reviser.
Thank you. Any clarifying questions on this article? Oh, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so as I'm looking through the library section and just trying to reconcile back to the funding spreadsheet, and there's a lot of the similarities here in here, but we have such a large disparity between the funding. I wonder if you could just walk me through why the large amount on the Senate side and reconcile to what I'm seeing here. I'm just not seeing where those dollars are coming through.
Who would best be able, Ms. Hofer, would you like to tackle that one?
Madam Chair and committee members, yes, thank you. Give me just one moment to find my place on the spreadsheet.
Line 161, that area, 153 to 162.
Thank you. I was looking at the larger, the full state appropriation spreadsheet, but it looks like you're looking at the change item spreadsheet on the library section. And as Ms. Gelseth was walking through the bill here, Section 7, the school library aid, is the primary difference in the appropriations here. And as Ms. Gelseth described, that would provide $15 per adjusted pupil unit. Or the greater of $50,000 to school districts and charter schools for school library services. And on the spreadsheet, on the change item spreadsheet, line 157, you can see for the current biennium, that would be $59.3 million, and in the second biennium, that would be $62.4 million.
Representative Kreshaw, follow up.
And I'm sorry, can you just walk, you said $15, can you walk me through those numbers again? You said $15 per, I just wanted to write them down. You were a little faster than me.
Ms. Yes, Madam Chair and committee members, I would actually direct you to the language in the side-by-sides where you can find those as well. That's on page R7 of the A9. On the Senate side, it's on page 127. It states that school library aid for a district or charter school equals $15 times the district's adjusted pupil units, or $50,000, whichever is greater.
So thank you. And again, I mean, we heard the libraries come through, we heard some of the need, but I guess I didn't hear in our testimony to this degree. So it seems like you amplified that on the Senate side or took it up a notch. What are you thinking? What was that? What's behind that? Just thoughts. I'm just trying to understand what came through the Senate side because I wasn't there, obviously.
Sure. I think what it is the chair of education finance is a library media specialist. Okay. And recognizing the lack of investment in our school libraries for so long. When you look at that, $15 is hardly enough to buy one book per student. And so my experience has been that not just, you know, the libraries that I had been in, but many of the libraries across the state do not have the funding, enough funding to keep up with current literature and, you know, a wide variety of that. So my goal is to support those libraries. It's not just for books, but it's also for technology and supplies. Libraries, as you know, across the state, many of those library media specialist positions have been eliminated. There are libraries that are locked up and students don't have access because there isn't staffing. And so this is an attempt to address some of the literacy issues in our state and make sure that kids have a variety of current literature that they can access and read for enjoyment, for education, and to share with each other.
Okay.
Representative Kresha, follow
up? Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that, Chair Kinesh, Senator Kinesh. So this really is an initiative with your background, which we're all here for those. So it, I'll just ask it because I know at some point we're going to have to get to it. Because of that, is does that make this item for you non-negotiable, or is it just kind of you're trying to put a stake in the ground? I'm just trying to sense out as we start to get to a reconciliation, and you don't have to answer, but being in a lot of talks over the years, the question is, what items can we move on? You know, is this something that's so near and dear to your heart that we're not moving on, so we have to look to other ideas? Or is this something that, hey, this is where I want to start, but we could get there through other means? I'm just trying to ferret that out.
Senator Kunis, did you want to answer?
And you don't have to answer. I'm just, those are what's in my head.
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just, I can't respond for Chair Kunis on whether it's a immovable or just a stake in the ground, but one of the things I can speak to is that working on the READ Act and, the, you know, whether it's $40 million, $70 million, $100 million that we're putting towards making sure that students can read, we want to make sure that there's people there who can then shepherd them towards things to read, right? And so, you know, they're in classrooms and they're learning with their teachers and they have books there. But I know for me, I was a voracious and still am a voracious reader. The places where I really got access to the things I needed to read was going to my library and having my library media specialist who, like, knew where I was at and was able to pull books that were appropriate for my age but also my reading level, right? And so that's where we really see, like, some of the most robust access to literacy materials is through our libraries and takes what we learn in the classroom and makes it in real life. And so for me, this is like the bookend, if I can use that pun, of the READ Act, right, is making sure that we not only have the tools and that students have the tools to learn how to read, but then they have places and materials to actually read and apply to real life. So I think this is a part that just has been ignored for so long, and we're lucky that we have a chair who does the work, but it is a critical piece of learning for students.
Thank you. Any other clarifying questions or comments? All right, let's go on to the next article. With the early childhood education article, I know a lot of this is being negotiated outside this committee and the early childhood committees. Did you just want to hit the highlights that are under our purview?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. That sounds great. On page 132 of the summary, so section or article 10 is the early childhood education. So if you see the no comparable provision also in House File 2292, that is being negotiated in the early education omnibus. So we're going to skip to page 133, section 1 of the House bill matches up, well, there's different, but it aligns with section 3 of the Senate bill, and this makes permanent additional seats in voluntary pre-kindergarten school readiness plus program. So the Senate makes permanent those 4,000 seats, and then the big difference here is that for fiscal year 2025 and later, the House adds an additional 5,200 seats on top of that. So their total seat count for voluntary pre-kindergarten and school readiness plus is 12,360. Then we get to page 134 at the bottom there. Our section 2 of the House bill is the same as section 6 of the Senate bill, and this calculates the pupil unit of a kindergarten student with a disability the same as a kindergarten student without a disability. Section 3 of the House, oh, I'm going to defer to the House on their section.
Madam Chair, members, section 3 on the House just conforms the calculation of the compensatory revenue pupil units to reflect the extension of the VPK School Readiness Plus program participants. Section 4 of both the House and the Senate are the same, eliminating the one-year adjustment to declining enrollment revenue that would occur should the 4,000 VPK SRP seats expire at the end of this year. And lastly, the appropriations are on the tracking sheet on the Senate side that correspond to those in the separate Senate file or separate House file. And for the House, the costs are entirely within the VPK program, so those are carried on the House spreadsheet in the offsets against general education and those kinds of places for VPK.
And is that way with this article? Got it. Any clarifying questions on that? And just a reminder, I think there is a levy interaction with that as well. Is that right, Ms. Beckel and Mr. Strom?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. Yes, there is a levy interaction with the VPK seats. For the House proposal, the levy interaction cost that the House is buying down has a cost of $17.39 million in the first biennium and $34.85 million in the second biennium. And then the Senate did their levies slightly differently. So if you'd like the Senate levy cost, I could let the Senate fiscal staff speak to those costs, I believe.
And go ahead, Ms. Hofer.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you. I'm just filling up the levy costs for those. And for the Senate, we are tracking about $5.7 million in the first year, fiscal year 2025. Fiscal year 2026, it would be about $3.2 million. And then in fiscal year 2027, it would be about $3.3 million.
Thank you. Why don't we move on to Article 11?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Article 11 is the Community Education and Lifelong Learning article. The first section have different dollar amounts. Both of the House and the Senate increase the basic general community education revenue amount. That's set at a per capita amount currently of $5.42. The House increases that to $5.75, and the Senate increases that to $7 per capita. Section 2, both the House and Senate bill adjust the community education levy so that there's no levy impact with this change. Section 3 in the House and Senate bills have to do with the after-school community learning program. Both bills use the same language to amend the same language for the uses of the after-school learning grants, the way the proposal for grants works, and the role of the commissioner to monitor and evaluate the performance of the grant recipients. Section 4, Madam Chair, is different. I'll speak to the House side. This is the Adult Basic Education, or ABE, program. The House makes a couple of changes. They ensure that the aid entitlement, which increases or is modified rather by the annual contact hours averaged over 10 years, that can't go negative. So that's the first change that the House makes. The second change in the ABE category that the House makes is to increase the hourly cap, which is currently $22 per contact hour, to $30 per contact hour. And Ms. Yelseth may want to speak to the Senate changes.
Madam Chair and members, on the Senate side, the Senate increases the state total adult basic education aid starting in fiscal year 2024 to 52.8 million, plus any amount that was not paid during the previous year due to any formula cap limits. The Senate also sets the state total adult basic education aid growth factor equal to the lesser of 1.03 or the greater of 1 plus the percent change in the formula allowance from the previous fiscal year to the current fiscal year, and or also includes the average growth in state contact hours over the prior 10 program years. Section 5 of the House bill is the same as Section 5 of the Senate bill, and this increases the rate for contact hours under that adult basic education program, and this ensures that the full appropriation is used. Section 6 of the House bill aligns and is the same as Section 6 of the Senate bill, and it extends the requirement that the commissioner cover high school equivalency test costs until 2027, as long as there is funds for this. Section 7 of the House file is different than Section 7 of the Senate file in that there are different amounts for this, but this increases the Adults with Disabilities Program revenue starting in fiscal year 2025 and later, and then I believe the Senate and House also have, I'll explain that in the next section, but different levy mechanisms to offset that levy increase. Moving on to page 138, Section 8 of the House bill is the same as Section 8 of the Senate bill, and this changes the names of the two education partnership grants. And then the next two provisions are Senate only, and then these both make technical updates related to that education partnership grants update in their name. And then lastly, the Section 9 of the House bill aligns with Section 11 of the Senate bill, and this is the appropriations section.
Thank you. Are there any clarifying questions on this? Article 12.
Madam Chair and members, Article 12 is the state agencies article. Sections 1 and 2 are House-only provisions amending the athletics programs and sex discrimination statute. Section 1 amends the purpose statement to include addressing inequities based on race and ethnicity. Section 2 expands the athletic program opportunity statute also to include race and ethnicity.
Section 1 on the Senate side is a Senate provision only, and this requires a department to employ a school health services specialist that would provide technical assistance to districts and charter schools for the education-related health needs of their students. This person would also serve as a primary source of information related to health matters, and then to serve as a primary liaison to the Department of Health and other state agencies. Section 3 of the House bill is similar to Section 2 of the Senate bill, and this modifies when the reasonable force may be used against the student. It also requires districts to report the use of reasonable force on a student with a disability beginning in the 23-24 school year on general education students. And the main difference here is the reporting year start date for the House is 23-24, and then the Senate is 24-25. Moving on to page 140.
Madam Chair and members, the next few sections are House-only provisions relating to PELSBY. Section 4 expands the PELSBY board from 10 to 13 members. Section 5 modifies the composition of PELSBY. It removes the Human Resources Director position from the board, increases the number of teachers, and modifies the required qualifications of some of the teacher positions. Section 6 requires board members to receive a stipend up to $4,800 annually. Section 7 strikes obsolete language regarding the PELSBY offices. Section 8 requires PELSBY to reimburse districts for the cost of substitute teachers to cover board member absences. Section 9 requires a public employer to grant a PELSBY board member time off for for board activities.
Section 3 on page 141 is a Senate provision only. This is also included in the early education omnibus. Section 10 of the House file is the same as Section 4 of the Senate file, and this allows the state academies to keep their rental income if they're Section 11 of the House file is the same as Section 5 of the Senate file, and this requires the commissioner to establish within the department an office of the inspector general, and then it charges that person with protecting the integrity of both the department and the state by detecting and preventing fraud, waste, and abuse in department programs. It also requires the Office of the Inspector General to conduct independent and objective investigations and to report fraud or other misuse of public funds, collaborate and cooperate with the appropriate law enforcement entity. Page 142.
Madam Chair, members, Section 12 of the House file establishes a mental health services lead of the Department of Education to address mental health needs in schools. Section 13 on the House side is similar to Section 6 on the Senate side. Both cancel $1.5 million from the department's 2022 appropriation for legal fees associated with litigation. Section 14 on the House side requires, this is transition language relating to those PELSBY board changes I went over just a minute ago. It requires the governor to nominate 13 members to PELSBY by July 15th, 2023, which would fill current vacancies. It sunsets the term of the current Human Resources Director on December 31st, 2023, and requires the governor to name a new member by January 1, 2024. And then the last four sections in this article are the appropriation sections for the department, the state academies, the Purpich Center, and Pelsby. And Madam Chair, that's the article.
Thank you. Next, Article 13, which I think would be probably pretty easy.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Sorry, McQuaid, any clarifying questions?
You said easy, and then is there a reason why we're sunsetting the term of this human resources director?
And which article are you looking at?
I'm still in article.
I mean, which section?
14.
14. I believe that came over from Pelsby's language. Ms. Cara.
Madam Chair, Senator May Quaid. So the composition of Pelsby is being changed. That position is being eliminated. So this is kind of the transition language, saying this is when that person would leave the board for the new member to come on.
Got it. Thank you. Representative Senator McQuaid?
That's it.
Why don't we go ahead and go on to Article 13 then?
Section 13 on page 143 is the forecast article, and this just adjusts the fiscal year 2023 appropriations to conform to that February 2023 forecast. So the same for both the Senate and the House.
And that was fast. All right. Any clarifying questions on the forecast article? I think it actually took maybe that much time in committee as well. I said this is what we're supposed to do, and that was it. So no clarifying questions on that? We might as well go to Article 14.
Madam Chair, members, House File 2497 and Article 14 is language related to grants management. This language establishes a uniform grants management process for entities to follow. This language was added to nearly all the House appropriations bills as they came through the House Ways and Means Committee. It puts limitations on the agency's ability to award grant. It requires grant recipients to submit financial information to the agency in the form and manner demonstrated by the agency. Allows the agency to not award grants if the forms aren't in order, and also requires reporting back to the legislature if the Department of Education were to not award any of the grants named in statute.
And then on the Senate side, that matches up with Section 8 on page 145. I guess the language might be a little different, but again, that was just added at the end here. And the only other section on grant authority on the Senate side is that Section 7 on page R1, and this allows the commissioner to transfer funding for grant administration and monitoring within the department as the commissioner determines necessary, and then also allows the commissioner to retain up to 4% of the amounts appropriated for grants for the purpose of grant administration. And that wraps up Article 14.
All right. Members, that went a lot quicker than I thought. So why don't we open it up for some questions or comments, and then what the chair and I were thinking is maybe what time are we looking at tomorrow? Did you say 1:30? I just want to give folks a heads up.
I think
up.
I have 1 o'clock.
Yeah, we will probably be posting at 1 o'clock just to let folks know. And then the rest of the week's schedule will be as fluid as we like to say here in the Minnesota legislature. Are there any other questions or comments? Senator Kunesh, would you like to add anything?
No. I'm just really proud of this bill this side by side, these two bills that we've put together. I think you'll see that there's, it's far reaching. It's really focused on the students and the classroom, where I think we need to refocus everything on. And very excited to go through this in more detail and get down to a final bill. And so thank you all for being patient and listening very carefully, asking good questions, and be sure to let us know if there are other questions or issues that you all want to address as we go forward.
Sorry. Clearly, I can't multitask. I wanted to say thank you also as well to nonpartisan staff for all your work. This is not an easy task doing side-by-sides and to walk through all of this. And thank you for knowing our bills probably even better than we do. Normally, I would just recess just in case you want to come back, but I think, Senator Kunesh, can we just probably adjourn?
Mm-hmm.
We're not coming back tonight, folks. So this meeting is adjourned.